Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the 20th day of February, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Hall. Let me start off today with what I would call a bit of good news, and some of you may have heard this yesterday, but about the time yours truly was finishing up the news report for yesterday, I heard a loud cry from downstairs, and one of our two pregnant female goats decided it was time. First time for her, certainly first time for us, too. Thankfully, everything went well, and she has two baby goats at this point, a little doe and a little buck. Mother and kids are all doing great, and she's turning out to be a great little mother. And truth be told, folks, baby goats are right up there with puppies as far as being beyond adorable. And so, not quite 24 hours in, all of us are learning a lot. And I guess I'll start off the other news today with some good news as well, or at least interesting news. The Covington Catholic High School students have decided they've had enough. And they've begun to file defamation lawsuits against those who, in some cases, literally sought their demise. President Trump even cheered Covington High School student Nick Sandman, whom he invited to the White House in the aftermath of that, to put it mildly, controversy surrounding the fake news confrontation that he had with, among others, Native American so-called activists and evidently not so much Vietnam veteran Nathan Phillips. Trump tweeted the following: "The WAPO ignored basic journalistic standards because it wanted to advance its well-known and easily documented biased agenda against President Donald J. Trump." And here he's evidently quoting directly from the $250 million defamation lawsuit. So he continues, "Covington student suing WAPO. Go get him, Nick. Fake news." And in a related story, with kind of a humorous twist, the former editor of Newsweek, Kurt Eichenwald, threatened the Covington pro-life kids. It wasn't the first time he's threatened high school kids, saying they should lawyer up, and now he's getting sued. The Gateway Pundit's coverage noted that back in March of 2018, Eichenwald attacked a pro-Second Amendment student from Parkland High School, Kyle Kashev. How dare they believe in constitutionally protected rights? And in January, he joined the mob attacking the Covington High School pro-life boys, tweeting the following, quote, "I know that some might say I'm being too harsh on teenagers. Unfortunately, the evil unleashed by Trump has infected millions of teenagers with their Hitler Valentines, Nazi salutes, and bullying of non-whites. And the infection can only be cured with harsh consequences," unquote. And I guess I'd have to say, "Und Achtung, Kurt!" Yeah, true confession time, folks, as if it wasn't obvious. Ignorant people who actually do act like Nazis and then demean others while emulating Nazi techniques really do bug me. There's a certain amount of hypocrisy there that shouldn't be overlooked. But after all of that, Eichenwald went on to single out the Covington students explicitly with this tweet. "As long as we're talking about religious schools behaving terribly, why don't we take a look at every student from Covington Catholic who surrounded and tormented Nathan Phillips and the others there? They danced and laughed. So here they are." Followed by a few of the, we now know, very much out-of-context photos. Which leads me to the punchline for this one. He warned them to lawyer up, saying, quote, the MAGA thugs also went after black people. Hey, guys, read this, then lawyer up. Let your parents know their failures are costing them," unquote. And all of this, as it turns out, was retweeted by Kentucky attorney Todd V. McMurtry, who's working with Lynn Wood representing the Covington Catholic boys. He observed, quote, "Just for fun, I snipped all of Kurt Eichenwald's doxing photos and sent them over to the attorneys for those kids against whom he tried to incite violence. Not smart, Kurt." Prompting at least one wag, who tweets as Hard Hat, to note, "Hey, Kurt posted close-ups of the Covington kids tweeting they should never get jobs, that instead they should lawyer up. And guess what, Kurt? They did. They lawyered up, and you're on their list." On then to more interesting news. Turns out that Dave Hodges of the Common Sense Show was thinking exactly the same thing your host was when the news came out yesterday about Mr. Wiener Man, Anthony Wiener himself, infamous sexter and former Congress critter. He does, however, look honest compared to the current crop, I got to admit. Ex of Hitler's girl Huma Abedin, and at least once possessor of all kinds of incriminating, he even called it insurance policy himself, information on that infamous laptop that police supposedly got. Inquiring minds want to know whether it still exists or not, or whether the fibbers have already sent this one too, to Bleach Bit Heaven. So maybe by now you're thinking the same thing we are. Anthony Weiner is out of prison after only 21 months. Well, number one, it's kind of interesting that he survived a stint in prison. Others, like Boston crime lord and Robert Mueller confidential informant Whitey Bulger, weren't nearly so fortunate. And two, of course, you got to wonder what his half-life might be on the streets before some kind of an Arkanside. Well, as to the surviving prison part, maybe that one's easy. Whitey Bulger, of course, was still stealing, wheeling, and dealing, and murdering as he was protected from prosecution by now witch hunter Robert Mueller, who used that information to rise and rise and eventually become not only top man at the FBI, but of course top man in the witch hunt too. To cover his tracks, writes Hodges, Bulger was eventually arrested and convicted, and he died mysteriously in prison last year, even though he was in solitary confinement. Obviously, dead men tell no tales. Certainly, there's no shortage of speculation about just exactly what Bulger knew and might have used against Mueller. But in all of that, there may be good news for Anthony Weiner, because with so many independent eyes on the Bulger murder, maybe people decided it was too risky to do to him what they did to Whitey. Well, at least while he was still in prison. As for your host, I'm thinking, hey, if I had one copy of all of that insurance policy information on a laptop, I'd sure want another copy buried deep somewhere, maybe as kind of a dead man switch that just might come out if it was ever needed, perhaps even following my demise, since that's probably a great way to stay alive. So with all that in mind, suggests Hodges, knowing what we now know about Hitlery and the Dixie Mafia, it ought to be clear that Huma Abedin and Anthony Weiner are both in grave danger, especially if they turn material witnesses, because we know full well that every day they walk freely is yet another day that puts Hillary Clinton and a whole litany of other nasty deep state crocodiles at risk for the exposure of a mountain of crimes, ranging from child trafficking to, of course, treason. From South America next, in the communist paradise of Venezuela, a border clash is imminent, suggests a zero-hedge review of a number of pieces, as Maduro has deployed military to borders to block what they are calling, well, questionable aid. Venezuela has shut a key maritime border and grounded flights, as the Washington-backed coup leader Juan Guaido has said that foreign aid will enter Venezuela from neighboring countries, both by land and by sea, coming up on Saturday. CNN reports, so yeah, take it with a grain of salt, that a government representative has confirmed Venezuela has closed its maritime border with Aruba, Curaçao, and Bonaire, and in the western state of Falcon, prevented flights from leaving or departing to those islands. While Maduro has rejected offers of foreign food and medicine, denying that there are widespread shortages, and accusing Guaido instead of using aid to undermine his government in a U.S.-orchestrated bid to oust him. And in comments broadcast on state TV, Defense Minister Vladimir Padrino said the opposition would have to pass over, quote, our dead bodies to impose a new government. Now we'll come back to that one in just a moment. Claiming it was unacceptable for the military to receive threats from Trump and that his officers and soldiers remained, quote, obedient and subordinate to Maduro. While the President of the United States on Monday warned members of Venezuela's military, who remain loyal to Maduro, that they would, quote, find no safe harbor, no easy exit, and no way out. You'll lose everything, he told a crowd of Venezuelan and Cuban immigrants in Miami. Michael Snyder, writing at the end of The American Dream, noted that Trump's recent threat to use the U.S. military to invade Venezuela, quote, all options are open, is admittedly pretty ominous. Of course, he said, the White House would gladly welcome a peaceful resolution that would remove Maduro from power, but that's very unlikely to happen, which means either Trump is going to have to back down and allow Maduro to stay in power, or else opt for a military option. And as we've seen in the past, other nations may participate in a coalition to remove Maduro, but ultimately the heavy lifting and most of the dying would be borne by the U.S. military. And if we end up talking about a potential U.S. invasion of Venezuela, as we've seen so many times of late, it would probably mean keeping troops there indefinitely, and almost certainly become another quagmire like we've witnessed in, well, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, and maybe next, South America. And let's not forget the Russians, too, because if we invade Venezuela, we could find ourselves in direct conflict with their forces that are already there. Well, folks, there's more on that subject. No doubt there'll be considerably more developments in the days, weeks, and who knows, maybe years to come. But in that speech in Miami to address the Venezuelan American community, Trump has again been widely quoted to say, "The twilight hour of socialism has arrived." The Epoch Times summarized the speech this way. By supporting a peaceful regime change in Venezuela, they said, the United States has paved the way toward purging South America of socialism and creating the first fully democratic Western Hemisphere in history. This, according to President Donald Trump in that speech on February the 18th, he is, of course, at least a critic of socialism and communism. He told the Venezuelan community that recent changes in South and Central America suggest the path toward democracy on the two continents is irreversible, and he pledged the support of the United States to Venezuelans who are, quote, standing for freedom and democracy. Of course, most of us who studied history know that those two things are in no way synonymous, and kind of pine for the days when most American leaders knew that we were never a democracy, but supposed to be a constitutional republic. Trump did say the following, quote, "We're here to proclaim a new day is coming in Latin America. In Venezuela and across the Western Hemisphere, socialism is dying and liberty, prosperity, and democracy are being reborn," unquote. Truthfully, folks, if the president was going to send American troops to fight and die against socialism, I'd rather he send them to the swamp. Because socialism from both left coasts is without doubt a more clear and present danger than anything from that far south. This is certainly worth considering as well. In his first major public address, says a summary from Zero Hedge, since the U.S. formally pulled out of the INF arms control treaty, Russian President Vladimir Putin warned on Wednesday that Russia would point its new arsenal of demonstrated hypersonic missiles, which can purportedly bypass NATO's ABM systems, directly at the United States if it dares to reintroduce ground-based intermediate-range missiles, which are a clear and present danger to them, to Europe. And according to Fox, Putin threatened to deploy Russia's new Zircon missiles, which he said can fly at 9 times the speed of sound and have a range of 620 miles, and are part of the country's drive to upgrade their defensive capabilities against an increasingly aggressive U.S. and NATO. And in another warning that, if true, will likely aggravate the U.S. defense community, Putin revealed that Russia has been carrying out successful tests, also, of its Burevestnik cruise missile and Poseidon nuclear-powered underwater drone, which carries the threat of unleashing tsunamis against the U.S. coasts. He did, however, suggest that the U.S. might still be able to work out their differences, quote, "We don't want confrontation, particularly with such a global power as the United States," unquote. But it does seem increasingly like those who are controlling the president on behalf of the deep state, if, folks, the truth isn't in fact something even worse, aren't interested in anything but. And on the Western Front versus socialism, we have this from the People's Republic of California. California's ill-fated new statewide bullet train project, say several stories, which has been reduced and referred to as a train to nowhere between Merced and Bakersfield, so the state doesn't have to return those $3.5 billion of purloined federal funds, took residents of the once golden state on a ride for over a decade. Initially, the costs were projected to be $33.6 billion in 2008, but Governor Moonbeam's special legacy project ballooned in estimated size to $100 billion by 2018. With service from rat-infested L.A. to feces-infested San Francisco to begin in 2033. So, in yet another I-told-you-so op-ed, note Zero Edge's summary, the Wall Street Journal editorial board provided a postmortem on yet another failed attempt towards a progressive socialist utopia using taxpayer dollars. They call it Death of the California Dream. And after a recap of the sordid history, note that our criticisms have now been validated by none other than Governor Newsom. Cost projections for the train have soared amid litigation, engineering challenges, and, of course, ordinary government morass, while private investors have run the other way. The state authorities already spent more than $5 billion acquiring and destroying hundreds of properties, but haven't yet laid any tracks. Taxpayers have finally lost patience, and Mr. Newsom stated the obvious on Tuesday that there, quote, simply isn't a path to get from Sacramento to San Diego, let alone from San Francisco to L.A. The Wall Street Journal poetically and prophetically calls California's bullet train to nowhere a miniature model of the Green New Deal. But the president seems to think "I told you so" isn't enough. The U.S. Department of Transportation says another summary from Zero Hedge via the New York Times is exploring legal options to claw back $2.5 billion from California in federal funds that have already been spent on the ill-fated statewide high-speed rail system. And the Trump administration is also canceling a $929 million grant. Hey, call it just shy of a billion. What the heck? Which was allocated to the California High-Speed Rail Authority in a letter from DOT just 1 week after Governor Newsom announced the project had been derailed by massive cost overruns and numerous delays. But instead of canceling the entire project, he wants the state to focus on finishing the teeny bit currently under construction, either from Merced to Bakersfield, or some call it the train to nowhere, which could open in less than a decade. Interestingly, the decision to yank back the grant money and claw back the billions in federal funds comes just one day after California led a filing, along with 15 other states, challenging Trump's emergency declaration on the border, prompting the president to respond by tweeting, quote, "The failed fast train project in California, where the cost overruns are becoming world record-setting, is hundreds of times more expensive than the desperately needed wall." And given what they're up to, he said, which doesn't seem to be very much other than wasting billions of bucks, they, quote, "owe the federal government $3.5 billion. We want that money back now. Whole project is a green disaster." Let's go to another aspect of the not merely socialist but outright fascist, because of the socialist public-private partnership, war on America. Jim Hoft at the Gateway Pundit reports that Chase Bank has suspended conservative and Jewish activist Laura Loomer from her online banking account. Take that, Laura. How dare you upset the deep state? The Republican Party, they note, and conservative leaders remain AWOL on this issue as the various public-private partner tech giants continue to ban, deplatform, and demonetize any conservative, constitutional, or libertarian voices that they just don't want Americans hearing from. This after Laura Loomer was already banned from Twitter months ago, and in January she was banned by PayPal, too. Not only cutting off her ability to speak, but to be funded. And this, says Hoft, is America today, where socialists, a.k.a. Democrats, are going after commerce and the incomes of their political opposition, just like you'd see in a banana republic or a truly fascist state, which is increasingly what we are. We do need a bit more good news today. This first story is really only good news if you understand it in the context of people finally waking up to it, and some of them at least, even being allowed to talk about it. Via Children's Health Defense and Natural News, Children's Health Defense, of course, is headed by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., perhaps the only prominent Democrat, says the story by Mike Adams, in America that's actually fighting to protect children from things like toxic vaccines, 5G EM radiation, and dangerous fluorides in the water supply. He's referring to testimony from Dr. Brian S. Hooker before Congress, who revealed how MMR vaccines actually increase total deaths from measles, noting that there's a problem with measles in Washington State, but it's not because of low vaccination rates. It's actually high vaccination rates with a vaccine product unable to provide lifetime immunity or vigorous passive maternal protection to infants during the first year of their life. He notes that when the measles vaccine was first introduced, most people over the age of 15 who had had wild measles also had lifetime immunity. In developed nations, like other communicable infections, measles was no longer dangerous anyway, except in rare circumstances due to things like inadequate nutrition, poor sanitation, or lack of health care. But because having the measles was in fact a routine part of childhood, teens, adults, parents, and grandparents were all immune. And because of maternal passive immunity, so were infants, also protected. The death rate due to measles in Washington State the 4 years prior to the introduction of the measles vaccine was 1.4 in 10,000 cases, or about 2 in 1 million among the general population. Legislators, he said, are being told that personal and religious belief exemptions are putting the public's health in danger, which is, of course, an utter crock. But the good doctor puts it a bit more circumspectly. They are told, he says, that 2 infants were recently exposed to measles and the babies are in danger. But in fact, if the mothers of the children had had wild measles when they were children and they're nursing, the babies, in fact, may be protected. And if the mothers were vaccinated, even if they are nursing, they may not be. And these differences just plain aren't getting talked about. And that's the primary bad news here, but also the good news, because at least people like Dr. Brian Hooker, for the time being, are trying to speak up. Next, another very interesting and arguably very good news, too, although it took some dead people to make it happen. After an innocent couple was murdered, said the Free Thought Project, over cop lies, the Houston police, at least, are now vowing no more no-knock raids. It's been 3 weeks, begins this piece, since the Houston PD fabricated information which led to a no-knock raid on an innocent couple's home. The botched raid left an innocent husband, an innocent wife, and their dog all murdered, as well as four cops shot. Now, in a move TFTP has never seen before, the Houston Police Department's claiming they're taking steps to prevent future scenarios like this from happening by literally ceasing the use of no-knock raids. Said Chief Art Acevedo during a heated town hall meeting on Monday, quote, "The no-knock warrants are going to go away like leaded gasoline in this city. I'm 99.9% sure we won't be using them," he continued. "If for some reason there would be a specific case, that would come from my office." And now, after controversy and rumors swarmed the case for quite a while, the Houston Police Department has been forced to admit that the entire raid was based on the lies of one of their own. Said the chief, "That's totally unacceptable. I've told my police department that if you lie, you die. And when you lie on an affidavit, that's not sloppy police work. That's a crime." Wow, folks, ponder that for just a second. Can you imagine talk like this from the attorney general, say, or for crying out loud, the top of the FBI? He went on to say that the officer or officers responsible for lying about this will likely be charged, although the charges themselves are still unclear. Quote, "I'm very confident we're going to have criminal charges on one or more of the officers," he said, to which the crowd responded, "All of them." And the story notes that the idea of using no-knock raids is revolutionary, given that police now conduct more than 20,000 no-knock raids in the American police state each and every year. A whopping 79% of those, like the one that was used to murder Dennis and Regina Tuttle, are for search warrants only, and most of those are for drugs. And a study by the ACLU found that 36% of SWAT deployments for those drug searches, and in perhaps as many as 65% of all such deployments, found nothing in the way of contraband of any sort. So that's a whole lot of dead pets, not to mention men, women, and children, for basically not much, unless you count undermining the Fourth Amendment. And while for now, at least, the Houston PD chief talk is just that, talk only, but even talk of an end to this horrible practice is precedent-setting. Let's hope we'll actually see something to later believe it. Which leads me to this story from Ethan Huff at Natural News. Yes, he begins, "It's been over a year now since the false flag at Parkland High School has been used as yet one more attempt to destroy what's left of the Second Amendment, but there are people coming forward on the other side, whether the press wants to talk about it or not. Among them, Savannah Lindquist, who told the story of how she could have stopped the perpetrator who raped her while she was still an undergrad in college if only her campus hadn't been a gun-free killing zone. She says she knows full well how to use a gun, since her whole family grew up with them, and she didn't bring one to school with her, and it cost her, out of, quote, respect for her school administration's anti-gun policies, which ended up leaving her completely defenseless on the night when she was raped. A horrific tragedy, she says, has left her shattered, and she now wants any American who will listen to know that guns are an important part of self-defense, and that banning them puts more women in danger. She testified before the anti-gun House of Representatives, "I just begun my senior year of college. I was at my dream school with my dream major. I love my job and was just months away from graduating, especially as a first-generation college student, when she was violated by an aggressor who, likely aware the school was a gun-free zone, knew he could attack her without worry of getting shot in return. Had I had one," she said, "I could have easily avoided being raped." And basically, that's what happens when you're a responsible gun owner who pays attention to irresponsible and unconstitutional so-called laws. Well, folks, on that note, that'll do it for today. Thanks for being with us, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.